Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Lincoln's home for sports talk on the FM dial. Also online at theticketfm.com.
On the internet.
KNTK FM Firth, 93.7 The Ticket.
This is your year, where your team takes it all the way. Win way more than bragging rights at War Horse Casino, where your love of the game could put $1 million in your pocket. The Pro Football Frenzy is free to play with prizes all season long. Weekly cash prizes up to $1,000 cash, season-long leaderboards, and a chance to win $1 million only at War Horse Casino.
Wagers may only be placed on Nebraska-based teams when played outside the state of Nebraska. Must be 21 or older to gamble. Gambling problem? Call 1-833-BET-OVER.
It's the best time of the year to order a new John Deere self-propelled windrower from Landmark Implement during the Early Order Program. Hay harvest is a race against time. Order a new John Deere self-propelled windrower to harvest your hay quickly and efficiently while promoting quick dry down for quality hay. Now is the time to lock in the best price of the year. Contact your local Landmark location for full details on a new self-propelled windrower and experience the Landmark difference.
Are you ready to transform your body and your life in just 10 weeks? At Farrell's Extreme Body Shaping, our kickboxing challenge combines heart-pumping cardio, strength training, and proven nutrition coaching to deliver real results. Lose fat, gain strength, and feel more confident than ever. Spots are limited. Don't wait. Join the next Farrell's 10-week challenge starting October 11th and take the first swing towards a healthier, stronger you. Farrell's Extreme Body Shaping, results, not excuses. Join today, fxblincoln.com. That's fxblincoln.com.
With your weekly high school sports update, I'm Nick Sainert. Capital City Schools had a respectable showing last Friday with Lincoln High beating South Sioux City 26-21. Lincoln Northeast stayed undefeated and improved to 4-0 with a 35-27 win against North Platte. Lincoln North Star blew out Omaha South 57-8. And in an inner city matchup, Lincoln East shut out Lincoln Southwest 20-0. We now turn our attention to Week 5 action this Thursday and Friday night with Lincoln Southeast traveling to number 1 Millard South. Lincoln Northeast hosts number 6 Omaha North and number 4 Kearney versus number 10 Lincoln East this Friday night. This has been your weekly high school update on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School. Sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Good afternoon, beautiful people, and welcome into another edition of Old School Live here and here only, 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Austin Orman with you. Jay Foreman will be along later, handling some business. He'll call in. We'll talk some college football weekend, some NFL weekend, and plenty, plenty more. Can't wait to be joined by the Husker Hall of Famer here in just a little while. But for now, it's you, it's me. And we'd love to have your input on the show. 402-464-5685. Be part of the conversation or spark a conversation on our Starter Heyman Jewelers text line or our Honda of Lincoln hotline, taking your texts, your calls, all the way into the start of your weekend. Looking forward to it. Should be a fun show as always. We'll lead off with a Nebraska high school football, really athletics, but focused on football now during football season discussion. Raph and I got into it just a little bit earlier today on the drive, but there's a really interesting article from the Flatwater Free Press detailing just how how common, how prevalent transferring is in high school football across the state of Nebraska. What has that done to the state? I'll give you some of my opinions, ask some of the questions, and just work through some of the mental gymnastics. John in Cortland, I appreciate that sentiment, sir. Have a fantastic weekend yourself. Thomas and Lincoln, appreciate you. We'll get to you here in just a minute. That's a great way to lead off our show. After we get done talking some high school football as well, the Big Ten seems to be scamming Venmo and Discover out of some money, not in an actual scam sort of way, but in a kind of just roll your eyes, raise your eyebrows sort of thing. So I'll tell you more about that in both the college football and the college volleyball fronts. Man, 8 years ago today, 10 people were arrested by the FBI in the college basketball, kind of not really money laundering, but, you know, the pay-for-play scheme in college athletics. So lots to get to there on that front. Like I said, 402-464-5685. Want to have a conversation with you. Just got confirmation from Jay. He should be along at some point between 4:30 and 5. All right, Thomas and Lincoln, what do you think the game of the weekend will be in college football and why? All right, let's just go ahead and pull up ye handy dandy college football schedule. So I think the contenders in the Big Ten are pretty clear. You think about USC at Illinois, that's going to be a really fun game. Styles make fights. Big moment for USC coming off a home win over Michigan State, and maybe an even bigger moment. It made an early defining moment in the tenure of Brett Bielema for Illinois. They get a home game against USC coming off the 53-point dismantling, and I mean dismantling, at the hands of the Indiana Hoosiers. Indiana said, we're going to score. We're going to score some more and some more and some more. And conveniently, more is the word for our cash blitz keyword right now. Text more, M-O-R-E, to 508-777-1000, or head to the 93.7 The Ticket website and click on cash blitz to enter. Today's keyword is more, M-O-R-E. Remember, every keyword you enter is yet another chance to win. One lucky listener will take home $1,000 tomorrow around noon. Don't wait. Text keyword more to 508-777-1000. So there's an early vote for USC Illinois. I think that's going to be a fun one, but that can't take the cake. Ohio State Washington, I could see going each of three different directions. Ohio State big, Ohio State close, or Washington close. I don't think Washington wins this one big if the Huskies are to pull the upset. The line has jumped by a couple points in favor of the Buckeyes. They were 7.5-point favorites yesterday, up to 9.5-point favorites here today. Maybe the game of the night in college football will end up being Oregon and Penn State. Of course, a rematch from last year's Big Ten championship game. You get to see, you know, is Dante Moore the best quarterback in the Big Ten? He certainly made his case so far. I think this is a defining game for Penn State, right? You get a top 10 opponent at home in what everyone said going into the year was your year. Feels like a year you've been building to for a while. You get over the hump, you make the 12-team college football playoff. Last year, after not qualifying for the 4-team playoff, you make it to the semis, and then you just get beat by Notre Dame. Pretty good game, back and forth game, but you just weren't able to move the ball through the air. Notre Dame held you down a little bit in the run game. And Drew Aller makes a little bit of a mistake late with the interception to ice it for the Irish. It's a big moment for Penn State. You know, same questions we have about Matt Rhule. Can he win the big one? Can he beat a team in the top 25? Penn State and James Franklin are looking for the answer to that question when it comes to teams in the top 5 or the top 10. So here's a wideout, 6:30 kick, national TV on NBC. Fantastic opportunity for Penn State to say, you know what? It is our year. People like Austin Norman who keep yapping, we haven't been underwhelming. We've been building. Not saving anything, but we wanted to make our first peak of the season happen against Oregon. The Nittany Lions have a wonderful chance to do that coming up on Saturday. But I think what we're seeing is that Oregon is maybe more portable than they've been in years past. It's not just offense or bust. The Ducks can play a little defense. Bryce Betcher, good player. Tatum Tuioti, good. Mateo Uiagalelei, very good player. You know, it's not just speed, flash, sizzle from Oregon. There's some meat on the bone. There's some muscle. There's some hustle in the Ducks as well. And I think that a game like this would be another way for Oregon to validate that, yeah, I mean, we still want to be the cool hip program that's getting the eyeballs with all the different uniform combinations. But a big question for Oregon coming in to the year was, how would they rebuild? How would they reload? However it is you want to look at it, Oregon lost a lot of talent. Some to the transfer portal, some to the NFL draft. There were some legitimate questions about the Ducks coming into the year. Going on the road, winning in the whiteout game over Penn State, it's been done before, but it hasn't been done by Oregon. These two teams just haven't played each other that much. It's still a new matchup in the new look Big Ten Conference. I think this would be a big validating moment for Oregon, for Dan Lanning, and the entire program to be able to say, yeah, what we're doing works. We're grown up as a program where we're not flying cross country and getting beat up by a Big Ten team. They're punching us. We're punching back. We can play in a physical game. I think those are probably the three contenders out of the Big Ten. But if we look at just the entire schedule in the early window, I mean, Notre Dame, Arkansas is intriguing. Duke, Syracuse has some implications. Cincinnati, Kansas, UCF, Kansas State are both interesting, but not in the game of the weekend conversation. LSU, Ole Miss could go a bajillion different directions. No idea what to make of the Tigers and the Rebels. Same thing with Auburn, A&M. You feel pretty good about where A&M's at right now, but it's still Texas A&M. Indiana, Iowa is intriguing. And then there's a bit of a drought until you get to the late night slate, where you get Tennessee versus 4-0 Mississippi State. That's not nothing. Tennessee only touchdown 0.5 favorites in Stark Vegas. But I'd be lying if I said the game of the weekend wouldn't be Alabama at Georgia. Kirby Smart, that is, just 1-6 against Alabama as the head coach of the Bulldogs. But I don't believe any of those games have actually been played in Athens. Let me double check my work on that, but I believe I read that earlier in the week. Georgia Alabama football series history. Enter. Send. So Alabama's won 9 of the last 10 against Georgia, and they lead the series overall 44-26-4. There have been some good games between the two. Georgia's made some comebacks. Alabama's made some comebacks. And it's been a really, really good season, or rivalry, I should say. But yeah, if you look at where these games between Georgia and Alabama have been played, last year in Tuscaloosa, year before that, it was in Atlanta for the SEC championship game, in Indianapolis in the college football playoffs when Georgia wins the national title in 2022, in Atlanta for the SEC title in 2021, in Tuscaloosa in 2020, 2018 in Atlanta, 2018, January of 2018 and December of 2018 in Atlanta. The last time that these two teams met up in Athens was 2015. So, do some math with me. Kirby Smart hadn't taken over yet. Kirby Smart has not faced Alabama at Sanford Stadium between the hedges. That's kind of wild to think about. He finally gets a crack at it. You feel like you trust Georgia a little bit more than Alabama at this point. Georgia, of course, being rated in the top 5, Alabama down at number 17 going into this matchup. Bama's still plenty good. Bama's still plenty talented. That's never going to end up being the issue for Alabama. Just feel like Georgia's maybe put it together a little bit more right now. So, can Kalen DeBoer get back in the good graces of Alabama fans by going on the road and pulling an upset? Or is it just as simple as, hey, maybe, you know, the master had the student's number in Nick Saban versus Kirby Smart. Now that they get a game in Athens again, there's potential that, you know, Georgia can finally get a win over Alabama in Athens. Now, of course, you can say, well, they play these games in Atlanta. That's in Georgia. It absolutely is. But it's not at Sanford Stadium. There's a big difference between playing at the home of the Falcons and playing at the home of the Bulldogs. Plain and simple. So I'm glad that we finally get this matchup going on in Athens, given that, again, the last time these two teams matched up in Sanford Stadium was in October of 2015. That's kind of crazy. That is far too long of a wait for these two programs to play at one another's home. Of course, it's not a series that was played every year. In fact, there's a gap here in between some of these games. I mean, Georgia and Alabama played in, let's just go back to in the 2000s. They didn't play in 2000 or 2001, played in 2002 and 2003, took 4 years off, didn't play again until 2007 and 2008, played a one-off game in the SEC championship in 2012. But in terms of regular season matchups, you had 2002 in Tuscaloosa, 2003 in Athens, 2007 in Tuscaloosa, 2008 in Athens. Then you went from 2008 to 2015 without getting a regular season matchup between those two teams. Then you go from 2015 to 2020 without a regular season matchup between these two teams. I mean, come on. That's crazy. To not get an Alabama-Georgia game with these two programs at or near the peak of their powers. I get it with the SEC divisions, why it happened. And I get it in terms of competitive balance. But in terms of big games that are big for the sport, important for the sport of college football, is it better that we get Alabama-Georgia in the SEC championship game? Or would it be better that it comes in the regular season? I find it odd that it's just been so scattershot getting these teams in the regular season just with how the SEC's conference scheduling model has gone. I do think ultimately, to answer my own question, probably best for the SEC that this matchup took place more often than not in the conference championship game. Because if you're the SEC, what you were able to pull off most of those years, is really what the ACC has never been able to pull off. What even the Big Ten was hardly ever able to pull off. And that's getting your two biggest brands, your two best teams in the title game as often as you can help it. Think about the Big Ten when it was East and West. Really, is Ohio State, maybe Michigan? But then who did you want coming out of the side? Coming out of the side of the West Division? You would have liked to think the Big Ten wanted Nebraska, the TV numbers in there, of course, the fans traveling to the game numbers as well. You got Wisconsin, you got Iowa, you got Minnesota as a one-off, but you were never able to get Nebraska elevated to that number two team in the Big Ten. It felt like more often than not, the Big Ten championship was being decided by Ohio State, Michigan there for a couple years, or Ohio State, Penn State more aptly for a handful of years. You got that game every year because they were in the same division, but you got it in September or October or November instead of in, you know, very late November or more often than not, very early December. Which is better for the league? It's probably better for the league that matchups like this happen in conference championship games in December instead of in the regular season. But we can't just all of a sudden go about devaluing the regular season just in an attempt to get these two biggest names, brands, best teams under the spotlight, right? So you think about Ohio State and Penn State essentially deciding the Big Ten championship in the regular season. You think about the fact that Clemson and Miami have had a really tough time crossing paths in the ACC championship game. Just hasn't really happened, right? I got to get my ACC Atlantic and Coastal Division history correct here. So don't mind me as I look this up just to make sure I have my teams in order. But when you look at the Atlantic and the Coastal that went away after 2022, so now you're in just the one mega conference. But the Coastal and the Atlantic have gone away. They've gone away, and you separated Clemson and Miami, your biggest current brand and your biggest probably historical brand, along with Florida State. But you separate them to try to give Clemson the current brand the path, and then you get Florida State, Miami duking it out for what you thought would be the other spot. It just didn't really work out that way at all. And because of that, the ACC obviously had to keep pace in terms of college expansion, and they went to the permanent matchup sort of model with the rivalries, the protected rivalries, just like the Big Ten did and just like the SEC did. And I'm really curious to see how that ends up playing out for the ACC. But they weren't able to do it. The Big Ten wasn't able to do it. The SEC was able to get away with these Alabama-Georgia matchups. And I'm really curious to see how Ty Simpson looks against that Georgia defense that's good. But does it have the same, you know, fear factor that the Georgia defenses of just a couple of years ago had? I don't think so. I mean, shoot, look at Tennessee, the barn burner that those two teams played. Is Georgia's offense back on track? Did it finally find what it needed to find? Man, if you're a Georgia fan, you might have been looking back a couple of years and like, really, Carson Beck and Gunnar Stockton can't lead the same caliber of offense that Stetson Bennett did? It's kind of funny to think about, but it's just been the fact of the matter. Is the Georgia offense back on track? Is the defense good? Is Ty Simpson going to be up for the challenge between the hedges against a certainly talented Georgia team? Can Ryan Williams emerge, be a playmaker, and do something crazy that excites Bama early in the game? We'll have to see. So I think that 6:30 viewing window is going to be very, very hotly contested between the Oregon-Penn State game and the Alabama-Georgia game. I think that's the perfect situation for you to just flip back and forth at commercial breaks, because we should be treated to a couple of fantastic, fantastic games tomorrow night at 6:30. We'll go to break here. When we get back, let's dig into some transfers in Nebraska high school athletics. What's going on behind the scenes? Is it good? Is it right? Is it wrong? Is it fair? What is going on with high school athletes transferring, mostly in Nebraska, maybe a little bit across the country, but we'll keep it close to home, and we'll look at it kind of through the lens of Millard South. Is what Millard South is doing healthy for football in Nebraska high school ranks? We'll get to that and plenty more when we continue Old School.
You're listening to Old School with Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Download the mobile app and listen wherever you are on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Friday Night Lights back on tap tonight across the state. And that's what we're talking about here on Old School. Welcome back in, Austin Orman with you. Jay Foreman will be along in the next hour or so. Millard South did it again. The Patriots dominate Lincoln Southeast, and that's all they've done all year. They do have a loss on the year, except that that loss came by forfeit in a game that the scoreboard read 49-7 Millard South over Arbor from Las Vegas. Is it wrong what Millard South is doing? Are they doing it by the book? Are they breaking the spirit of the law, if not the letter of the law? There's a lot to get down to, and this isn't going to be just a Millard South segment, because there's so much more to it than that. First and foremost, want to shout out the Flatwater Free Press for this article. Jeremy Turley was the one that wrote it, published a week ago yesterday. So go to flatwaterfreepress.org. and you will be able to find this article. The first thing that really catches your eye in this article is that over the last 3 years, according to Turley's research, nearly 1,500 high school athletes have switched schools without having to sit out. 1,500 athletes of high school age in Nebraska have transferred in the last 3 years. You talk about portal, you talk about vortex. That's kind of crazy. Okay, the next thing, one sentence later, one paragraph down. How about this? In 2004, the average margin in a Class A football game was 30-12. Scoring has pretty much continued to go up over the 20 years since then, and defenses have gotten better.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions. conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Or so we're led to believe. From 30 to 12 being the average margin of Class A football game in 2004, now in 2024, the average score, 43 to 10. Think about that. From an 18-point average margin of victory to a 33-point average margin of victory in Class A. That's pretty nuts, and that's a good indicator. Hey, something's going on. Why are the good teams getting better? Or why are the bad teams getting worse? Is it that the good teams are getting so much better? Is it that the bad teams are getting so much worse? There's a lot to break down. There's more than just one factor, but you definitely have to take into account the impact of transfers. Okay, you think about how the Class A brackets have shaken out over the last few years. You look at Millard South winning last year. Before that, Omaha Westside went back-to-back, blanking Elkhorn South in the final in 2023 and winning a tight game, the Tristan Alvano field goal against Gretna in 2022. And in fact, Westside gets brought up in this article as well. Westside specifically, in terms of its football, right? More than half of the players on Westside's roster, I believe this is last year, yeah, for the 24-25 school year, more than half of Westside's football roster transferred in, about three quarters of their softball roster the same, and about half of its volleyball roster. So yeah, option-based enrollment students. Sorry, so just under half of football, right? So 33 out of 70 last year for the players on Westside's team. 33 of 70 transferred into the school district, except it wasn't just high school, right? Early on, Turley's reporting says that 26 of the 33 used the option enrollment option to join the Westside school district between kindergarten and ninth grade. So, okay, transfers fueling Westside potentially to consecutive Class A state championships. 2021, Gretna. Why did Gretna lose its championship? It got stripped. The title got vacated because of a misreported or unreported transfer rule. So that's four in a row, potentially. Ooh, excuse me as I sneeze. Four in a row of schools that have gone to, or of titles that have gone to schools that you can say transfers had something to do with it. It's not everything, but it's definitely something. And that's just the good getting better. It's also about the worst getting worse, right? Think about what's happened to the Benson program that's gotten decimated. Burke was really good until Coach Lamongi moved to Westside, where he won those two titles, brought quite a few players with him from Burke. And it's really more of a philosophical question. Is it right or is it wrong for this? And I think there's just a lot of questions to sort through. So let's start with Ben on the Starter Human Jewelers text line before we get to my thoughts. Yes, the crazy amount of transferring is not good for the sport in Nebraska. When you get teams that can constantly reload via transfers, it depresses participation throughout the state. Why bother going out for football if you know it best you're playing for second place? That last part is a little defeatist. I'm not going to lie. That last part doesn't necessarily sit right with me. I would not advise someone not to go out for football just because they might cross paths with Millard South at some time or, you know, Bellevue West back in the day or Omaha Westside. I don't think that that's a good reason to not play football. But I can understand why, oh yeah, I mean, we haven't been good in so long. Why would I go out? We're just going to get our butts kicked. I can understand why the getting your butt kicked would lead to, you know, depressed numbers of young men going out for football. Ben says he doesn't blame Millard South for not doing anything against the rules, but the rules should be changed. And Ben, I do not have the data on where exactly these players have transferred from. One example that comes to mind for me is Nelson Wheeler, who transfers in from Grand Island to Millard South. And he's an interesting case. Because you think about a guy like Nelson Wheeler, who was clearly a good player at Grand Island, one of the state's leading rushers out there for the Islanders. Why would he transfer from a place where he is the focal point to join a team where he's just another guy? Now, a big part of the team, certainly. But why would Nelson Wheeler transfer? Did his family move to Millard, get new jobs or something? No, don't believe so. Did he move there because the Grand Island School District is underperforming academically? That doesn't seem to have been reported, which leads you to believe that it's for athletics. Is that right or is that wrong? 1705 says, the only difference is that private schools have been doing it forever. Need to regulate the private schools. Okay, that's an interesting sort of point. 1380, we'll get to you here in just a second. Okay, so let's take that example. Private schools versus public schools. Is it right? Is it wrong? Is it fair? Is it unfair for Millard South, essentially right now, to be turning into that prep school? Is there a difference between transferring into Millard South from transferring into IMG, or from transferring into Prolific Prep, or from transferring into Sunrise Christian or La Lumiere or anything like that? What makes a prep school different than Millard South, or what makes Millard South different from a prep school? Is there anything making it different? Should they be treated as similar? Should, you know, the prep school moniker or reputation only belong to those true prep schools, or can a random public school, you know, randomly become a prep school just because there's a good coach, right? And I'm just going to run down some of the questions that I have in order, because I don't have the answer. It is very much a philosophical sort of debate that the NSAA is, I know, working feverishly to parse through. So my first question, how necessary is transferring in high school? Is it necessary? Is it not necessary? Obviously, if you move cities, you move towns, you move states, you got to transfer. I get it. But if you're living in, I don't know, Gretna and you want to go to Millard, or if you're living in Gretna and you want to go to Westside, you know, or you're living in Papillion and you want to go to Bellevue, you know, are we anti-school choice all of a sudden? Is it about the school? Is it about the athletics, right? Do we really want to start policing transfers? Do we want the NSAA to turn into the NCAA and have every student athlete that wants to transfer in high school go in front of a committee, go in front of a jury to judge if their transfer is valid or not? Who judges whether a transfer is legitimate or not? Do we want to tell someone, like, for example, Nelson Wheeler, he can't transfer from Grand Island to Millard South because he wants to get recruited better, right? And again, is it any different transferring to Millard South versus transferring to a more traditional prep school? Is there a difference? I don't know. You know, is it a problem that athletes want to transfer to a better school or to a better program? Everyone wants to join a winner. We see this across sports. You know, high school transferring is not free agency. At least it shouldn't be. There better not be payments being made to high schoolers or their families to have their student athlete change school districts, you know, in a pay-for-play sort of world, right? But I would like to live in a world where there's school choice. You know, I like markets. I like saying, hey, if this school is underperforming academically or athletically, you know, and I want to transfer, I should be free to do so. You know, are kids transferring for academics or athletics? You know, I don't want to say, no, you can't transfer for athletics. That's a stupid, shallow reason. Because what if this young man or woman that's transferring for athletic reasons, nominally, what if that's their only chance to go to college, you know, a good college and get a good degree, and they transfer to school where they'll get some recruiting attention and they get the chance to be the first in their family to go to school? Do we want to be the judge of, oh, you're just transferring for athletics? No, I don't want to do that, because hypothetically, there's more to it than just the athletics, right? Championships go in waves. It really does. Schools, classes go through cycles. We see this especially, I think, you know, class B and below. Class A is just a little bit different with the enrollment sizes, but all this stuff goes in waves. I mean, Millard South is on its run right now. Westside had a couple years. Gretna had a couple years. West had a couple years. Burke, Omaha North, right, had a run there for a while. Omaha Central and basketball did. Millard North obviously had its run in the early 2010s. Lincoln Southeast had a run. Some of this stuff is cyclical, right? Some of the stuff you just got to wait out, and we shouldn't rush to make a decision about transfers just because one school's on a run and we don't like it. You know, I don't think that's necessarily fair. You know, are parents and athletes getting too caught up in the moment of athletics? Have sports taken on too big of a priority? Over, here's the next part, are we losing the core of what it meant or what it could mean to be a high school student? Is the magic of growing up and going to the same elementary school and middle school as your buddies, getting to know them, playing sports together, and then parlaying that into high school, are we losing some of that magic due to club sports, due to AAU, what have you? You know, is the magic of playing with your neighborhood friends being replaced by the all-consuming need to win or get recruited? I can't blame parents or kids for wanting to get recruited, wanting to go play in college, getting a free education, going places that, you know, might not have been possible just a generation before. It's not up to these parents and these student athletes to look out for the other kids in their neighborhood. It's not about that. But is it really worth losing that fabric that makes these vibrant communities, that makes it so fun to see communities rally behind this group of young student athletes that have grown up together, that brings joy and lights up a community because they have athletic success for the first time in a long time, right? Is it even wrong to get caught up in recruiting and going to the best school possible for your student athlete's best chances to get recruiting, right? What if going to college on an athletic scholarship is the only way a kid would be motivated to do well in school and be the first in family to go to college, right? I don't want to get in the habit of policing transfers that seem like they're just for athletic reasons. Now, there's right and there's wrong. You know, if you're a kid that's living in Grand Island and someone from Millard says, hey, you're really good, we're just going to move you here, keep your family behind, and you can, you know, live with a coach. Clearly, that's wrong. That can't be happening. That's essentially pay for play. That's stack. That's not how it should be. But Jason says, should be, you just have to go to your district. I get it. I really get the thought. But if there's an underperforming academic district, and as a parent, you're like, hey, this isn't cutting it, right? My child's not getting the education they need. Then I don't want you to be stuck in that district. I want you to be able to have the option to transfer out to a school that's going to be better for your child academically. But if the only reason you're transferring is for athletics, I don't like it. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying it doesn't sit right with me. It just doesn't. I understand the rationale for it 100%. Of course you want to be on a better team instead of a worse team. But I wish that there was more of that persistence, more of that determination to build a program and to grow it. And it's not easy. Sometimes it takes generations. Sometimes you got to put in that legwork and it'll be a generation before that work really pays off. But I think it's better in the long run, right? The problem is it seems like the competition is being diminished. Jason follows up and says, if you're good enough to play Division I, your coach should be making phone calls around. Well, yeah, I get that. But think about if you're, you know, say you're a coach at a class D1 or C2 school. Oh, Eric, I'm not the one hating freedom. I'm the one saying freedom of movement is great in theory. But back to Jason's point, sometimes these coaches have more on their plate, right? More than just, oh, I have a star athlete. I have to help him get recruited. Maybe don't know where to start to get a phone number. Maybe your school doesn't have that culture or that history of getting a lot of student athletes recruited to the Division I level, even the Division II, Division III, or NAIA levels. You know, I know this for a fact, is that Lincoln Lutheran is doing a much better job now of helping its student athletes get recruited than it has in a long time. It's a culture thing. That's something that you have to change. And I'm sorry, if you're at a C2 or D1 school, yes, it is legitimately harder for you to get recruited, right? You can put up eye-popping numbers, but you're always going to have that tag of, oh, well, you know, were they really playing against the best competition and just, you know, running roughshod over, you know, a bunch of kids that didn't have the right coaching or whatever. And these coaches, they're often teachers who have lesson plans and grading to do, often have families of their own. Maybe they're, you know, maybe they're farmers that they're coaching volunteer wise and they have other stuff that pop up. You know, maybe they're working, you know, 8-9 hour days and then coaching and then family, right? I don't want to put it on just the coaches and the onus to get these young people recruited. keep going here through the list. Mr. Mike D, there's a lot of transferring just within LPS. Students transfer to play with their club coach, etc. Yeah, and they get shepherded toward some of these programs. That's what happens. Is that right? Is that wrong? Right? Like, let's say that this club coach has been really good for the athletic and personal development of a young player. It's a mentor. There's a special relationship there. Who are we to tell the kid, no, you can't transfer out of your district to play for this person that means a lot to you? That doesn't strike me as the right thing to do if there's that special relationship. I don't like that at all. 1380. They've effectively killed public school football in inner city LA. When you look at the high stakes transferring in California and Florida, obviously those teams would smoke a lot of Nebraska teams, but also you can debate whether the level of talent at one school like Don Bosco or Modern Day is good. 4491, private school recruitment is such an overblown issue, does not happen nearly as much as people think. I'm not on the inside anymore. But again, just from my experience at Lincoln Lutheran, I mean, it's just normal student body recruiting as far as I know, right? Sure, sometimes you get to pick and choose. Sometimes you are able to bring kids in. But in terms of the recruiting you think of, I agree. I think it's overblown. I do think it happens. Let's go ahead and go to break. We'll keep this conversation rolling. You guys have lots to get to on the text line. I promise you we're not getting to an answer. We're not getting to a satisfactory conclusion. But there's more from this Flatwater Free Press article and more from you guys on the Sartor Hammond Jewelers text line as we continue Old School.
Watch Old School live on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
You guys are great. A lot of great thoughts on our Sartor Hammond Jewelers text line as we look at the state of the transfer portal, if you will, especially as it comes to Nebraska high school athletics. Austin Orman here, and you, Sartor Hammond Jewelers text line, are a fantastic piece of this conversation. Let's just keep rolling through the list of texts here. We'll go to Scott in Lincoln. It's very difficult to agree with what Millard South is doing. It's completely unfair to every other kid in the state of Nebraska who busts their butt to try to be able to be the best thing they can be, and to know that another school is automatically getting all the best players because of transfer rules. It's just sad. I can agree that it's difficult to agree with what Millard South is doing and what Westside is doing. But maybe instead of doing something wrong, maybe they're doing something right in building up a program that young student athletes want to play for. Maybe they're doing a good job with their academic offerings, you know, and that's what attracts people to that district. And who am I to stand in the way of that? Who am I to say that's wrong? If they have a competitive or comparative advantage, whichever way you want to look at it, good on them for it. As long as they're not breaking any rules. And there's a big difference, of course, between breaking the letter of the law in breaking the spirit of the law. Let's go back to that Flatwater Free Press article here. There's an interesting little section here about who decides to transfer. And so according to Mike Sauter, friend of the program, overwhelmingly, he says it's parents eyeing college athletics opportunities for their kids who initiate conversations with coaches, not coaches initiating conversations with players and families. And then you add the club sports and social media breaking down some of those natural geographic barriers. There were some numbers in there about what could have happened, what could have been done in terms of the transfer portal, in terms of transfer portal, you know, athletic and academic transfers in high school. So from the same article on the Flatwater Free Press, in 1989, Nebraska became one of the first states to allow students to transfer outside their home district through a program known as option enrollment. But even before it became law, critics worried the education policy would have sporting implications. A year earlier, in 1988, Minnesota's creation of a similar law had set off a chaotic flurry of illicit recruitment and high school athletes switching teams. To prevent that fate, Nebraska barred districts from considering athletic abilities as part of their admission standards and prohibited students from competing for a year at their new schools. The sit-out period was shortened from one full year to 90 days in 1990. Today, most transfer athletes don't have to sit at all. High schoolers get one free transfer as long as their schools tell the NSAA about the impending transfer by May 1st. In each of the last 3 years, more than 450 student athletes moving both within and between districts have appeared on that May 1st list. Let's get to this from an anonymous texter who says, I'm a high school coach in Lincoln. This is happening like crazy in LPS. It's ruining high school athletics. A lot of evidence in recruiting has been pushed aside. Kids put bullying when their initial transfer request gets denied, and that gets it automatically accepted. It's a real mess and is not high school athletics. This shouldn't be college. Yeah, anonymous texter, that does seem kind of like a cop-out. Again, if it's true, if there is legitimate bullying going on, yeah, get him out of the district, give him to a new school, give him a fresh start. But if you're using that as a fake reason to transfer, that minimizes the very real downsides and harms of bullying, and especially for those who are trapped in their district that don't have the opportunity or the means to be able to transfer out. John on the Sartor Hammond Jewelers text line. As far as high school transferring, if you want to get noticed, if you're good enough, somebody will find you. That's usually how it works. That's sometimes how it works. You think about a guy like Carter Nelson at Ainsworth, right? Why did Carter Nelson get recruited? Well, guess what? It wasn't because he just played sports at Ainsworth. He did the camps. He did the circuit. That cost money. You know, Carter Nelson and his family put in the legwork to get him recruited. It wasn't just his head coach calling around and saying, hey, this Carter kid's pretty good. You better fly out to Ainsworth, Nebraska to do that. Nick Saban doesn't get on a plane and go to Ainsworth just because Ainsworth's head coach calls him. It's because Carter Nelson's been around on the circuit and done camps and impressed out there. So as much as we would love it to simply be, if you're good enough, somebody will find you, that's just not necessarily true. We'd love it to be true, but we can't just buy into that narrative. It's sometimes true. It's not always true. Let's go ahead and go to break. You guys are coming in with even more text. I think this is going to be a really good discussion to continue. So as we look here, Joe B., Mr. Mike D. Kip as well. We'll get to you guys and plenty more on our Sartor Hammond Jewelers text line. This is Old School brought to you by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. We'll keep talking high school transfer portal in Nebraska after this on Old School.
You're listening to Old School with Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Download the mobile app and listen wherever you are on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.